Movie conversation team now, and full Mark Kermode is here, Brad Bird of Incredibles fame, and also Edna Mode. Now, this is, was that always, if you haven't seen the film, how would you describe Edna's character?
Well, I had always wondered if there's a world populated with superheroes, if you started on that premise, then who's designing these costumes? You know, you'd see a few movies and they would show the muscle-bound hero sewing in the basement as a way of explaining it, and I never really bought that. So I thought if somebody was going to design something for superheroes, she'd be half designer and half kind of like the person who outfits the, you know, action hero. You know, she'd have to have a knowledge of science and this material would have to have unusual properties. It would not only have to take a tremendous amount of abuse, but it would also have to stretch a lot or turn invisible. So she'd have to be half scientist. And that's kind of what she is. She's half designer, half scientist.
And it's Edith Head, right?
You know, everyone is convinced that she's modeled after an existing person. And I went around the world, and my list of names that people are sure that it is up to 25. She's probably the highest rated person on that list.
Okay.
But in Japan, they were convinced it was a male fashion designer. French thought it was Coco Chanel. It just went on and on. I heard Patricia Highsmith. I heard it's up to 25 now.
This email from Carla, who's listening in Montreal, Canada, said, hello, everybody. Was wondering, Brad, if you could give us a little Edna Mode. I saw the movie with my sister.
No, but she's outside in the lobby here. You know, if we can open the door.
Yeah, I'll just go and open the door then.
Hang on.
All right, yeah.
What is it? You want me to shill for this film again? What? I'm here now, darling. What do you want? This is so tiresome, really.
Mark, we're almost part
nice
of a Pixar
meeting
production.
Pierce there. Brosnan?
It was nice. He had a cold, though, so he missed his cue.
Oh.
And I, being James Bond, I suppose that makes sense. We also miss cue.
Anyway, Carla in Montreal. There you go.
That's as close as we're ever going to get.
And didn't sound anything like Richard Nixon. Did you always know that you were going to voice it?
Well, we do temporary soundtracks where we kind of use people in the building to do voices, and we have like 600 people at Pixar, so you can actually cast and get kind of in the ballpark. But the intention is to always replace these people with actual actors. And sometimes, though, people get stuck on the voice that's as it is, and they stay in there. You know, Andrew Stanton, who did Finding Nemo, directed Finding Nemo, did the voice of Crush, the surfer dude turtle in there. So that one I was kind of encouraged to leave in.
And on the DVD, not only do you get, we spoke to Bud Lucky a few months ago. Oh, it's just fantastic where these guys, where you know, you're Brad Bird, he's Bud Lucky. I think you've made your names up. I think you're probably called Jonathan Williamson, really.
Yes.
Anyway, but so he's on there.
He's also the voice of Rick Dicker. Speaking of, you know,
Rick Dicker. I mean, I rest my case.
I know. I just like to say, in terms of temp tracks, they will eventually, when this program's finished, remove me and replace me with a proper film critic. This is just the.
Do you think that's right? This from.
I'm getting very. I feel sorry for you now. I want to.
Oh no! Don't go down that route. It's very dangerous.
I want to get you a cup of tea or a blanket or something. I want to make you feel better.
Oh, I have enough bile to feel better for many years.
Here's an email from Neil Young. It says, Simon, I enjoyed The Incredibles. I congratulate Mr. Bird on its ongoing success. It's a very formal email. The high profile of the film will hopefully cause viewers to go back to Mr. Bird's previous picture, The Iron Giant, an underexposed gem, yes, which is probably the best animated film I have ever seen. Is there any chance that the film may be re-released or relaunched on the back of The Incredibles' success and that of Iron Giant voice artist Vin Diesel, who wasn't that well known back then?
Well, the special edition DVD of The Iron Giant is actually coming out in England next week.
Wow.
So they are kind of caboosing.
And the rest of the United Kingdom as well.
Yeah.
Neil says, also please make sure that the terrific Edna Mode, of which you just had an exclusive sample, gets much more screen time in any future Incredibles 2. Is there one?
You know, a lot of people have mentioned it. I think that
funny,
probably, you know, we've all seen the sequels that shouldn't have been made.
Yeah, but
you know?
Toy Story 2, I think, you're
is
on a...
Godfather 2.
Godfather 2,
yeah,
Toy Empire
Story 2,
Strikes
with respect,
Back.
Is a better comparison.
No, oh, no. Good sequels are good sequels. And Empire Strikes Back
so
is
now
great.
Now we're friends against you, you see. So now yeah. I've changed the...
I'm just thinking Godfather, Toy Story, Incredibles. I think maybe Incredibles closer to Toy Story.
We're having a bonding moment. You carry on.
Yeah. Speaking of Bond, Goldfinger's the third Bond film, and it's my favorite.
Your Majesty's Secret Service is the best Bond film.
Yeah, just
distance.
Wish it. I wish we could
you
trade Connery from
sure, yeah.
Diamonds Are Forever.
Yeah.
Just do one more film, Sean.
Wrong guy, but better film.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Awesome.
While you're here, and we were reviewing
great theme song too.
Yeah, absolutely. Can I stay part of this?
I'm sorry.
we were reviewing the new Bond book on yesterday's program, which is called Silverfin by Charlie Higson. It's Bond as a boy. At school, and apparently it's terrific. You got your boys outside, you pick up a copy, and I think he'll enjoy that.
Oh, yeah?
I think so. Cliff Robinson in Great Yarmouth in Norfolk says, Simon, love The Incredibles. I've liked Holly Hunter since I saw her in the film Broadcast. I say it here and it comes out there, which is our kind of routine from a couple of weeks ago. But now I've actually fallen in love with her voice. Me. Brilliant film. Looking forward to seeing the DVD extras, in which is featured, am I right, the Mozart's Confutatis from his Requiem Mass.
Yes.
There you go.
Yeah.
This is from one of your little extras. Just explain what happens because it's worth teasing people on that.
There is a short called Jack Jack Attack, which basically shows what happens with Jack Jack and the babysitter, in the film, while the family is off having their adventure. It kind of shows what happens. So even though it's separate from the movie, it takes place during the movie. And the notion is that she gets Mozart to stimulate development, and it stimulates a little more than she thought was necessary.
And of course, Mark, you'll know instantly the other very famous scene that Mozart's Confutatis.
Well, it'll be Shawshank Redemption, won't it?
No, that's Amadeus.
Oh, well, you know, how would I know that? How would I know that?
The Confutatis is the scene where Salieri and Mozart compose that thing together.
Is it?
And Mozart is dying.
What's
and Salieri
the, what's the bit of opera in Shawshank Redemption then?
I think that's
the bad scene.
HMS Pinafore, I think.
Yes, that's right. Hey, I always like to have Americans talk about Gilbert and Sullivan. Overwhelmingly, the texts and emails, Brad, are asking about a Simpsons movie, whether that's going to be a good thing, whether it...
They've been talking about it forever. They were talking about it back when I was on the show, and I was in the show in the first 8 seasons. The problem is the people who would make the movie are making the TV show, and the TV show... is still popular. So you'll see the movie. I would even put down a wage. I'm not involved with the show remotely. I haven't been for, you know, since Iron Giant. But I think the moment the TV series goes off the air, they will start working on the movie because people just can't get it enough time to... I mean, the TV series is really hard to produce. And the minute that the people stop demanding it as a TV show, then they'll get to make a movie. And I think they'd make a good movie. I mean, Jim Brooks is awesome.
Does it occur to you, maybe first thing in the morning or last thing at night, having been a part of the greatest television program many people consider ever, and having done The Incredibles and The Iron Giant, and you won an Oscar, next?
You know, there are a lot of kind of movies I want to make, and I'm interested in live action, I'm interested in animation, I'm interested in blends. I like westerns.
Where you get a combination of live action and animation.
And nowadays, because of digital technology, the line between all the different kinds of animation and live action is so blurred that you could combine things in a really strange, cool way. People are only beginning to see what animation can do. There are still very clear lines being drawn between hand-drawn animation, puppet animation, CG, and I think that those are going to all blend together in very unusual ways in the future. So I think it's a really exciting time. I have a lot of things I want to do.
Are there as many problems with doing things like human skin as there used to be?
There are, but, you know, those are problems that are being solved. We solved a few of those problems on Incredibles, you know. We weren't after trying to make them look realistic, but we used some techniques that does make the skin look more alive. And it's actually a technique called subsurface scattering. And the idea is that in actual human skin, the sunlight penetrates the first layer of skin, hits blood vessels, and disperses under the skin. So there's a rosy glow that happens. And we actually have it in The Incredibles. It's very subtle, but it is something that keeps things from looking plastic. They look more alive. Now, the problem with that is if you don't handle it right, they start to look like deformed people rather than like, you know, enjoyable to watch cartoons. So
well, there's that weird Final Fantasy film in which they described it as photorealist, but in fact, what it looks like is just strange.
Yeah,
it's neither
just
animation,
really, just... yeah, Quaalude people or something. You know, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
We'll do some
the
more with
Dad.
Can you stay with us, Brad, for a few more minutes? Okay, more with Brad Bird and Mark Kermer. We'll do some movie reviews for this weekend's releases, and we also have a competition which we need to do for The Untouchables as well. 5 Live, 3:15. And just to underline the obvious, when I said The Untouchables, I obviously did mean The Incredibles. It's 3:16. 5 Live, more movie conversation in just a moment. Mark Kermode and Brad Bird, and we've been talking about The Incredibles. We'll set the question fairly shortly. Because there is now an Oscar, Brad, for Best Animated Feature, does that mean that your area of work is sort of pigeonholed? And you know, as long as you stay to Best Animated Picture and those kind of areas, then that's it?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, you hesitate to be too critical because any kind of award you get is, you should be gracious about it. And you know, any kind of award is an honor, especially an Oscar. But there is a feeling that if a voter actually feels that you were made one of the five best films of the year and you happen to be animated, if they nominate you in the animation area, they kind of feel like they're done and another spot's opened up for them to nominate another movie. And so some people feel that if that area didn't exist, several times an animated film would get nominated as Best Picture, you know.
But presumably in the same way that, and I may misunderstand this, in the same way that Michael Moore wouldn't allow Fahrenheit 911 to be put forward in the Best Documentary category, you can refuse to have an animated category.
You can do that, and, you know,
I mean, obviously
you take your chances,
yeah.
You know.
As Michael discovered to his channel's chagrin, I'm sure.
We have three...
We did get nominated for Best Original Screenplay, though, so I was very gratified by that.
Would you prefer to have won that one?
Just because no animated film has ever won that, it would be as even sweeter, I think. Yeah.
We have three copies of The Incredibles on DVD. Brad, do you want to set a question for us?
Set a question?
Yeah,
sure.
set a question, then people will ring in 0500-999-693, and we'll pick some winners at random.
All right. I'm going to ask a question.
Well, you probably
know. Since you made the movie,
I could set an Incredibles question. Mark could set an Incredibles question. It's your movie.
All right. Oh, geez, I wasn't ready for this.
I could set a question, which is how wrong was I? A, wrong. B, very wrong. Or C, fireably wrong. I mean, you know, because I'm not proud.
I would ask.
Make it tricky, because they'll get it.
Okay. What is the name of the vehicle that transfers Mr. Incredible to the underwater island base?
It's a toughie.
It is a toughie.
It is a toughie.
Okay. Repeat it, please, Brett.
What is the name of the vehicle that he uses to get to the island?
0500-999-693. Can you write down the answer? And then when people are answering the phone, then we'll know exactly whether it's the right answer or not. We'll do the box office top 10, and I suppose if you're involved with making movies, you have to be respectful about other people's movies. What happens here is I do the top 10, Mark does a pithy kind of couple of paragraphs about what he thinks of the movie, and I was just thinking, if you want to chip in, do you get to see other movies?
I've been on a really quick spree to see them before the Oscars, so otherwise I'm completely pop ignorant right
okay
now.
Well, if I mention a movie and you've seen it, you have to chip in with something.
Okay, I'll chip in.
Okay, if you haven't seen it, you'll be silent.
Okay.
Okay. Box office top 10 this week, SpongeBob SquarePants movie.
Well, as we know, I'd never seen it on television. I saw the movie. I just laughed all the way through it, and I thought it was the strangest thing I'd seen. Really, my 4-year-old, then 3-year-old, just almost fell off his chair with delight.
I watched the television show and love it, but I have not seen the movie.
Coach Carter at 9.
You're looking at me. I wish the audience could see this look. It's like...
You're the king of animation. It's an animation. I had high hopes that at least you'd have seen that one of all these movies.
No, I haven't, but I want to.
Okay. Coach Carter at 9.
Well, you know Blackboard Jungle, and you know Dangerous Minds, and you know To Sir With Love. Well, it's that film, except it's got Sam Jackson and a slightly more updated soundtrack, and it's way too long, but Sam Jackson does his stuff, and it's apparently based on a true story, although I suspect that liberties have been taken.
Yes, I have not seen it, but Sam Jackson rules.
Million Dollar Baby, number 8.
You know, I'm a big fan of Million Dollar Baby. The thing that has annoyed me most of all is that the religious right in America have kind of blown the plot twist by campaigning against Clint Eastwood for endorsing something which I'm not even going to say, because if you haven't heard the religious rights campaign...
She's a ghost?
Yeah, exactly. She's a ghost. It's a sledge, you know, and all that. So, yes. So, but
don't you find that really interesting? Because when he did Dirty Harry, you know, the left was all up in arms.
It is incredible. It is absolutely amazing that
Clint finds that quite
that Clint Eastwood is now being held up by the American right as some kind of liberal pink. It's like it's Clint Eastwood, for heaven's sake. No, it's a very good movie. I still think Imelda Staunton should have won Best Actress, but it is very, and of course it has that classic Clint Eastwood sparse direction. You turn up, you get the stuff done, and Morgan Freeman is terrific.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed the film a lot. I felt like, sometimes I wish it took a few more stylistic, farther.
Yes. Okay.
And I thought strangely that Mike Leigh's film had a little more style visually,
Yes.
Which is strange because it's a far less cinematic, material than boxing is.
But it's wonderful, isn't it? Very
yes,
great.
It is. And she's amazing. In
yeah.
It. Yeah.
She, and I still think this. I still think she should have won. Not that I haven't got a respect for Hilary Swank, which I have, but I still think Imelda Staunton should have won.
Have we passed on the right answer to anybody?
He's written it down here, but I can't say it out loud because what with the microphones being open and everything.
Does someone want to come in and get the right answer? And then, because all these people ringing in knowing the answer, 500-999-693 for that mode of transport used by Mr. Incredible. And the right answer will be purveyed to the right people if you call now. Number 7, Ocean's 12.
It's a bunch of, famous people enjoying themselves, and apparently they had a wonderful time on set. It's just a shame that that didn't transfer over into the audience. And it's a classic case of, we were talking before about perfunctory sequels. You know, Ocean's 11 took a bunch of money. Let's do Ocean's 12. Presumably we'll now get Ocean's 13, which is a bit sad, because it is actually rubbish.
The funny thing is Clooney said in interviews, I think when they were doing Solaris when it came out.
Which I liked a lot.
That he said, well, what if these other films don't make money? And he went, Ocean's 13. or Ocean's 12. And then he ended up making Ocean's 12. I agree with you, though. It's lazy.
It is lazy, particularly the moment when the Julia Roberts gag happened. That is just, that is the big screen, Technicolor, lazy.
Number 6, Are You There Yet?
Are we there yet?
Are we there yet?
Yeah, no, we aren't. It's rubbish.
Am I there yet?
No, nobody is. Avoid it. It's dropping like a stone, as it deserves to.
Hotel Rwanda, number 5.
Very interesting, very tough. As we were saying last week, the most astonishing thing about it is that for something that is actually fairly recent history, you can be guaranteed that most people don't know much about it, and I include myself in that. It is harrowing. Don Cheadle's really good.
And he's really good.
He is. It is a moving film, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And she's also amazing.
Sophie Okonedo.
Yeah. Yep. She was very harrowing. And, deserves to be seen, I think.
What certificate is it in the States, Brian?
It must be R in the States, but here it's 12, isn't it?
It's 12A, yeah.
The censors have actually really stuck their neck out and given it a... Because, of course, there isn't much graphic on screen, although the subject matter it's dealing with is very heavy, but I think they've actually made a decision to make it available to a younger audience. I mean,
so that people will learn
it's something
I think
that you
so,
should
yeah.
See.
I think that it's a brave decision.
Shall we dance number 4?
Well, I'm not talking to you about this because it's the Richard Gere movie and you didn't mention me to him.
I'm hoping, Brad...
Do you know Richard Gere?
No, I don't.
Oh, we do. Well, I do, anyway.
I thought everyone who lived in Hollywood knew each other,
Have you seen Shall We Dance?
No, I have not.
That's not going anywhere then. Meet the Fockers, number 3.
Well, again, on the subject of late, I mean, yes, there are gags in it, but the fact is, I still hold that the original Meet the Parents, of which the big screen Meet the Parents was the best, and the big screen Meet the Parents just about got away with it, and I think Meet the Fockers was, one step too far, and I'm, again, appalled by the fact that we're now probably going to have a third one because it took so much money. It's fine, but it's incredibly, it's much more American Pie than it ought to be, and it's not, it's not a great work of art, but it has taken a shed load of money.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but it's astonishing. You know why I think sequels make so much money now is that people that don't see the original film see it on DVD, and then they go to the theater. And so that's a very kind of weird, unhealthy trend that is around now is that sequels oftentimes do better than the originals, which to me is telling Hollywood, if you repeat yourself, we'll reward you.
Yeah, exactly.
Hide and Seek at number two?
It's just toilet. And, you know, quite apart from the fact that the poster is a rip-off of the Exorcist poster, the picture is a rip-off of the Exorcist picture, and the film itself takes the Amityville Horror, the Omen, all those films that I, you know, grew up with, and then just rubbishes them and has Robert De Niro doing one of those, excuse me, where's the check performances. I mean, it is absolutely terrible, and everyone involved in it should be thoroughly ashamed of themselves, but I hope that the paycheck made it feel better.
And the UK's number one is Boogeyman.
Rubbish. And again, it's a real shame because I'm a really big fan of Sam Raimi's. I mean, Sam Raimi, because when he directed The Evil Dead, changed the face of horror cinema. He's then responsible for The Spider.
But he didn't direct this.
No, he didn't. It's Sam Raimi presents Boogeyman. And the funny thing about it is Sam Raimi and Bob Tappert, his, you know, production, who I like very much, incidentally, have now sort of got this umbrella organisation putting out films which they tell us are influenced by Japanese movies such as Ringu and The Grudge. And I would have loved to have seen the movie that they talk about in the press notes. Boogeyman itself is an absolute nuts and bolts piece of, you know, quiet bang, quiet bang, quiet bang for 90 minutes and then it stops. It's really not good.
Okay, so, Brad, it's been fantastic having you in. Appreciate
Thank
it very,
you.
Very
I wish
much
I'd
indeed.
Seen more films.
let me just give the answer to the question and we'll bring in Nick from Oxford. Hello, Nick.
Oh, hi there.
Yes, sir. So, Brad, repeat the question, please.
What vehicle does Mr. Incredible use to get to the island?
And the answer is?
I think it's a Manta jet.
Yes, it's a score. Manta jet. Correct, sir.
How did you know that?
It's a wonderful thing called the internet.
Ah, cheers.
And not enough to do on a Friday afternoon, you know, and working at home. All those things come together for good.
Nick, we'll send you the DVD. Appreciate it very much. Thank you very much indeed.
Google has really taken the fun out of quizzes, hasn't it?
Brad Bird, excellent. Thank you very much indeed, and thanks for coming in, and we look forward to whatever it is.
To the special edition of The Iron Giant coming out next week.
Well, we'll look forward to that, but that seems...
Get that and The Incredibles while you're at it.
Yeah, believe me, I don't think you have to talk The Incredibles up. I think it's kind of happening.
I think it's there. Brad, thank you very much indeed. Five Live's quarter to four. John Pino will keep us updated with events from Westminster. He'll be watching that debate. Meantime, some movie reviews. Here's Mark. What's big this week, Mark?
Hostage, which you probably posters, you know, for all over the place. The new Bruce Willis movie. Bruce Willis is just a funny old stick in the mud. On the one hand, you know, he's the action hero star of Die Hard 1, Die Hard 2, Die Harder, Die Hard 3 with a Vengeance, and the forthcoming Die Hard 4.0, which seems to suggest that he really needs a hit, because you don't go to do Die Hard 4 unless you kind of need something bankable. On the other hand, he's got all those things like Terry Gilliam's 12 Monkeys, which I absolutely love, M. Night Shyamalan's The Sixth Sense, which is a very intelligent movie, and the Alan Rudolph movie, Mortal Thoughts, which is just fantastic. And occasionally you'll get something like Pulp Fiction, when he kind of combines the Bruce Willis action hero with the smart-talking, you know, postmodern intelligent thing. But generally, he has to decide, am I going to do the meat-headed action stuff that, you know, that pays the rent, or am I going to do this sort of intellectual stuff that actually, no, because nobody went to see Mortal Thoughts, although I think it's absolutely his best film. So along comes Hostage. Hostage is directed by Florence Siri, who's French, incidentally, and directed a fairly well-respected Euro-thriller, the translated title of which was The Nest a few years ago. And the story in Hostage, which is based on an apparently a best-selling novel, which I confess I haven't read, although apparently the film diverges quite far from the novel, is Bruce Willis, at the beginning of the movie, is a hostage negotiator. And in the very opening scene of the movie, we see him doing a hostage negotiation that he gets completely wrong with terrible results. Cut to a year forward in time, and we know it's a year forward in time because he's shaved off his hair, he's shaved off his beard, he's got rid of the sort of scruffy clothes that he wore as a hostage negotiator, and now he's become a local police chief county in some quiet backwater where every day is low crime Monday because he's run away from the terrible responsibility of what he was doing with his job. Then a rich house is broken into by three adolescents. They hold the house, the family hostage. Bruce is kind of involved overseeing at the beginning, but he doesn't want the responsibility, so he hands the responsibility over to another police department until, guess what, Bruce's family get kidnapped by the mafia, who are connected with the guys in the other house because he's got a DVD which has got a bunch of their accounts on it, and they want Bruce to, believe me, don't take my word for it. Here's an explanatory clip in which the action set up the moral dilemma of the film, which incidentally is expressed on the poster as, would you sacrifice another family for your own? Here's the setup.
I want you to go back to Walter Smith's house. There's a DVD inside Walter Smith's house that belongs to me.
I'm no longer in command.
You are going to reassume command until my people arrive to finish the job. You're not going to let anyone go into the house or anything come out. Are you with me so far?
I can't do that.
You are the famous Jeff Talley. 10 years SWAT. 7 years prime hostage negotiator. You'll figure it out. When this white phone rings, it'll be me. With further instructions. If you deviate from the plan one little bit, I will kill your wife. And then I will kill your child. But when I have what I want, you get your family back.
I was expecting the heavy breathing and the throatiness to come with
nine songs.
No,
it comes with this. So, look, what it really wants to be is it wants to be an intelligent action thriller which raises a bunch of interesting moral dilemmas. According to the director, it's inspired by the film noir traditions. And, of course, the director apparently served under Eric Rohmer. And so, therefore, he's got all these artsy credentials. Which is funny, because I watched the film and went, no, this is just meat-headed tosh. The problems with it are manyfold. One of them is that Florence Siri obviously learned his trade in the pop promo world, and there's this whole thing in pop promos. If you want something to look deep and significant, you do it in that kind of brown sepia, and you make it look a little bit grainy, and you cut everything on what they call Dutch angles, you know, weird wonky angles. It looks like you kind of mashed it together in the kitchen.
Dutch angles.
Right. Yeah, it's a gag because, of course, in Holland everything is flat. So cameramen, being the wags that they
very,
are,
very very funny gag.
Exactly. I mean, be still my aching sides.
Excellent.
Dutch angles.
You haven't said that for a couple.
No, I got into God Bless You for a long time, but now I'm back to that. Anyway, so there's loads and loads of that stuff. And Bruce Willis does the thing which Bruce Willis now does. Oh, you know, I used to be an action hero, but now I'm retired, which kind of parallels my actual on-screen career. I used to be an action hero, but now I'm doing more intellectual roles. But hey, I have to be called back into the, because I don't really want to, but hey, I've got to do it. Now, if you remember in the first Die Hard, the whole thing in the first Die Hard was John McClane, Bruce Willis, climbing around in the air vents whilst on the phone to an old codger policeman on the outside. He was in the building, the old codger was outside. In this one, there's a young kid climbing around in the air vents on the phone to Bruce Willis, who's on the outside. So you think, oh, there's something interesting happening there. But then, of course, actually, when the proverbial hits the fan, it's Bruce who gets to take his clothes off, strip down to the vest, go in, shout. He has three facial expressions. Moderate scowl, but a bit angry, and howling scowl, which is for angry, blowing things up, or for the bit at the end of the movie when he cries. The fact that Bruce actually gets to cry is Bruce demonstrating that he is still a serious
actor. I bet he still looks good in a vest, though.
He doesn't look as good as he did, but he still looks better than I ever have done. And, I mean, the fact of the matter is with Willis, he's a real contradiction in terms. I rather like him, because I think he does have a charismatic charm. He's definitely somebody that the camera loves, and he's funny. But the problem with Hostage is it's not funny, it's not smart, it's not satirical, it's not inspired by the film noir traditions, no matter what Florence Siri says, and it's just a meat-headed action movie that I think occasionally falls into rather nasty exploitation. I mean, for one thing, exploitation movies are what they are. They're, you know, cheap and shoddy and nasty, and they're not proud of it. That's just what they are. There's something about Hostage with its endless reliance on images of loved ones being tied up and bound and abused. You know, it's really kind of tacky and seedy and yeah. And you sit there thinking, if this was just a scummy Roger Corman movie, I wouldn't care. There'd be a scene in a strip club, there'd be an exploding helicopter, it'd be fine, you'd know where you are. But there's some kind of moral sanctimoniousness involved in putting all these sort of very leery, violent images, you know, images of torture and all that stuff in front of us, but it's okay because we're rooting for the good guys.
I haven't forgiven him since he tried to chat up my wife in London Zoo.
Bruce Willis?
Yeah.
When did Bruce Willis try to chat up your wife in London Zoo?
A couple of years back.
Really?
Yeah, and that's it. I'm not going to see any of his movies now.
Okay, fine. Well, believe me, you're not missing anything in the case of this. Shall we? Can I move swiftly on to...
You move on before the Prime Minister comes out.
Okay. As Brad Bird left, you said the Prime Minister's statement is coming up, and Brad Bird said his statement is, actually, I quite like Boogeyman.
Well, it might be.
It might be.
I think it's unlikely.
Nine Songs. I talked about this a little bit after Cannes. Nine Songs is a new film by Michael Winterbottom, and basically it's been described everywhere as the most sexually explicit film ever to be allowed into British cinemas. It's probably true. It's basically a relationship between two people which has broken down at the beginning of the film, and the guy is remembering his relationship, and he's remembering in terms of him going to a bunch of gigs, the Nine Songs of the title, and in between that, the sex that he had with his girlfriend. And it's all done on handheld video. And basically, the film's very short. It's only about 65, 70 minutes long. And about half the running time is taken up with two people in a hotel room or in their own room having sex, having actual, real, you know, here it is, we're not simulating it sex. Now, Do we have time to play a clip, or what do you figure?
Go ahead.
Okay, firstly, I should say that my big problem with this film is this. I didn't find it in any way arousing, which it clearly isn't meant to be. That's absolutely fine. One of the things that Winterbottom has managed to do, which I think is interesting, is to make the least titillating, most explicit movie around. I mean, it is astonishing that a film with so much explicit material in it, because there really is nothing left of the imagination, is so completely free of titillation, and good for him. In fact, it's dull, and I think he aimed for dull. My problem with it is that I found it irritating, and the reason I found it irritating was I found the two people irritating, and here's the reason why.
We spent my birthday in a hotel where a friend of Lisa's worked. Lisa gave me a book on the Antarctic as my present.
The ice is everywhere and everything. It spreads to all sides, an unbounded void of alien whiteness and geometric rigor. Antarctica is the highest, windiest, driest continent. Its topography and dynamics, the simplest on Earth, an exercise in reductionism. The iceberg is a microcosm of Antarctica. It's a fragment torn loose from the continent, both substance and symbol. Within its ice, the berg contains a record of all ice terrains. As it moves away from the mass of ice, it gradually disintegrates. Most bergs will last less than 2 months in open sea.
Yeah, yeah. People will watch it with the sound down, won't they?
They will. They'll turn the sound up for the... Oh, actually, ba-boom. Sorry, I missed that joke. Yeah, well done, Simon. Do you want to run it by me again?
No.
Okay. You know, there's the songs which they'll turn the sound up for, obviously. The problem with the film, which is probably also its triumph, I hate these two people. I just found them really annoying, really aggravating. There's a great moment in which...
So they two like that all the way
all
through?
All the way through. And the guy says, oh, she was great. She was one of those people. She was crazy and egotistical and carefree. And I think, yeah, who I would spend 2 minutes with and then leave because I can't.
An exercise in reductionism.
It is.
What is that?
But the interesting thing is that if you just said, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to make a film that shows everything, but absolutely is just, you know, unbelievably dull, then for that, Winterbottom should be praised. When Winterbottom is good, like when he makes 24-Hour Party People, which I love to pieces, and, you know, we had Tony Wilson on the program, and it's a great, great film. When he's bad, he makes films like Jude and Butterfly Kiss, which is one of the, you know, 20 worst movies ever made by anyone. And Nine Songs is like somewhere in the middle. On the one hand, it is incredibly dull and incredibly pretentious and incredibly full of itself. On the other hand, as a sheer technical exercise, it's kind of interesting. Yeah, fine. So you managed to do that, and at no point is anyone even vaguely aroused. My only concern is this. It's been passed uncut by the BBFC 18 Certificate for Cinemas. Fine. Great. They've made the decision that I predicted they would make. Incidentally, I'd like to say that I think I was the only British journalist in Cannes who said they'll pass it uncut in cinemas. They won't want to cut it.
Well but, done, you.
Thank you. You want to say that with slightly less sarcasm? Because I've already had the Nick Broomfield bad breath thing. I don't have to go through it with you again.
No, no, you've done very well.
Can I just say, incidentally, Nick, if you're listening... Anyway.
That was like an exorcist moment for me.
I hope it was. And, you know... Nick,
keep going.
Again, if you're listening, my breath smells, but your film stinks. The problem with it is that it's... When you pass that uncut on video, I think you're going to give yourself a precedential problem. I would think that in 6 months' time, there is every possibility that having passed Nine Songs uncut on video, a distributor of a porn video could legitimately go to the BBFC and say, hang on a minute, if you've given him an 18 certificate, then give me an 18 certificate rather than an 18R certificate. And the BBFC's defence is, well, this is art. It's got narrative. It's got characters. I hate those kind of distinctions. I don't believe that you can distinguish between art and not art. So I think that they may have given themselves a rod for their own back. But hey, as far as the film itself is concerned, it'll come and go in the cinemas. There won't be any problem, you know, with people who want to go and see it will go and see it. They won't be titillated. It is an interesting exercise, but a boring film.
Give me something that might be quite good then.
The Chorus is a funny little film. It's the biggest selling movie in France in 2004. Apparently just shy of 9 million people, 9 million French people, one presumes, went to see it. And it's a debut feature, and it was up for Best Foreign Language Film, and also, I think, for Best Original Song. You may have seen, if you saw the Oscar ceremony, you know, they always do that thing about performing all the best original songs. In fact, the best thing at the Oscar ceremony was Antonio Banderas performing that song from The Motorcycle Diaries, which was absolutely great. I didn't know Antonio Banderas was such a fantastic bar singer, but it was him and Carlos Santana. Anyway, the Chorus, or Choristes, but I think Chorus is the title that they're publicising it by over here, is a story of a a school for very troubled children, 1940s France, late 1940s France. A teacher turns up. He's very quiet, very unassuming, very smiley. He turns out to be a music teacher. He takes these people who are tearaways and ruffians and awful, and they've all been, you know, the state has given up on them, and here they are in this reform school, and he basically turns them into a chorus who starts singing this absolutely beautiful close harmony, and he teaches them to overcome their problems. The whole thing is set in flashback. At the beginning of it, we see these two, one of whom has turned out into a very successful musician, looking back on his life and how he learnt these important lessons in life through this great music teacher. Now, on the one hand, it's incredibly cheesy if you describe it like that. And people have, for example, made the comparison with Amelie, you know, the Jean-Pierre Jeunet movie, mm-hmm. which everyone said was too sickly sweet for its own good, although I actually rather liked it, although I thought it was darker than most people did. Although when I told Jean-Pierre Jeunet that, he said, yeah, you're mad, but he said it in French. I don't know what the French for it is, les fou or something. Anyway, the chorus is fine. It's actually nothing like as cheesy as it sounds, partly because it was never intended to be a big mainstream movie. It started out as a little independent production. The guy shot it for very little money, using kids, which is very expensive and very time-consuming. And it was actually rather moving. Yes, you know, one might find it a little saccharine sweet around the edges, but I thought its intentions were good. I thought it was charming in a good way. There were definitely moving moments in it. I mean, if you've seen films like Goodbye, Mr. Chips, and if you're familiar with that oof, or oof, is that oof?
An oof is an egg.
If you're familiar with that film making egg, then it may not surprise you. But I thought it was rather sweet. It is apparently based on a 1945 film, which I confess that I haven't seen, which is fundamentally the same story. But it's rather sweet and rather charming.
And Denise in Derbyshire says, the chorus was a delight, simple and uplifting. Really? I came out of the cinema with a smile on my face. Most of the Hollywood films are simply vehicles for spending lots of money, and many British films full of gritty realism, as they can be quite heavy.
Yes.
But she wants more publicity for movies, such as The Chorus. So,
well, there we go.
Movie of the week?
Well, I would say The Chorus, actually.
And anything else?
Well, yeah, very quickly, on the case of Life is a Miracle, the Emir Costa Rica film, he said the pigeon was dead and he was animating it with bits of string. Yeah, right, Emir, but well done to the BBFC for standing firm by the Animals Act and only backing down when it was proven that this pigeon wasn't suffering.
Mark, thank you very much indeed. Have a splendid weekend. We're back Monday at 1. Drive comes next.